And good morning to you all. And I thank you, Brother Josh. Words so well spoken, you should have just kept right on there. Did you get to the third word? Okay, I wasn't quite sure if you got all everything said that you wanted to say, but it'd been really good to hear that. And I was blessed with Psalm chapter 1. So, just for whatever it's worth, I'm going to not take the time now, but my better half, and I say this periodically when I'm talking to crowds, if I've had any success in life, at least 51%, I like to say, sits over here. So she pointed out to me that A and D should be on this slide, and I decided not to change it, just let it the way it is for now. I'll not take the time to shift it around, but at any rate, so blessings and challenges is where we were. And let me see, I am wanting to go to intentional grandparenting here, and hopefully we're, I blanked it now, huh? Okay, there we go. So, maybe just two quick references here to tie things together. One of them is that our grandson and Marvin Rose's grandson, Elliot, came knocking on our door the other day. And remember, I'm a pack rat and I'm downsizing. Came knocking on our door and said, "Grandpa, can we have those wheels that you were showing me out in the barn?" I was cleaning up the barn and I said, "Yes, how many do you want?" He's kind of a little bit of a small-sized engineer. And so at his birthday, he said, I would just like to have a box full of trinkets that I can build things out of. Oh boy, I went to my drawers again and I started pulling out wires and batteries and switches and things and just threw them in an old toolbox I had and gave them to him. So you might consider maybe training a grandchild or so to help you downsize. This he was doing well, I thought. Maybe a little bit of a connection between last evening and intentional grandparenting. On a more sober side, I was thinking, having a memory of my grandfather Burkholder on the maternal side of my life is it's a Burkholder family. My mom was a Burkholder. I never knew my paternal grandfather because he passed away when my father was only 11 years old. And my father being an only son in that particular family became kind of the man of the house at 11. I'm sure that he had lots of help from other places there in that process. But thinking on my grandfather, I didn't realize what kind of a privilege it was, but for the last 10 or so years of his life, him and Grandma Burkholder, they lived right across the street from Sheila and me. And I happened to get my size, my great stature from the Burkholders. If you know anything about the Burkholders, they're small. And my grandfather was smaller than me. But he was a giant of a man in many ways. I remember one of my sons coming over, we had sent him over to get the mail or something, after Grandma had passed away. My grandfather lived another 3 years, I think, or so beyond that. And he said, "I don't know, Grandpa's in there talking," but he didn't answer the door because they would take his mail in too, you know. So I went over. Well, Grandpa was kneeling down at his sofa and praying out loud, and this is like 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay, so I don't think I would need to tell you that example has been very, very, very powerful. So here was a man, an aged man. He'd have been chasing 90 by that time, maybe 92, I can't remember, but at least 90, and maybe. And speaking of time and what do we do with it, here he was in the middle of the day, or middle of the morning, and he was praying. And I, after having given my wife credit, then I would also say that I have that strong sinking, impression deep down in my gut somewhere that the prayers of grandfathers like this, and of course fathers and mothers, I don't know. I wonder where in the world I would be if I didn't have a grandfather who prayed regularly, apparently, from what I can tell, in this way. So intentional grandparenting. I don't know what Grandpa Burkholder was thinking during all that time, but that felt very intentional to me. And I would not fail to say that my grandfather Burkholder also, on one occasion, he had a few words of rebuke for me. I'm sure he had more than one. I don't remember the other times, but I remember one time he came to our door and I was an adult. And he was very concerned about a particular relational issue that I didn't seem to be taking care of properly, and I can still see him, small as he was, knock on my door, open the door, and he almost never had an unkind remark for anybody. And he did not really have an unkind remark, but he had a few words of wisdom there for me. And I could still see his lip quivering a little bit as he spoke. I don't know if it was out of fear or concern or what, but I haven't forgotten that either. So on one hand, praying, on another time, actually offering a rebuke to me. I probably was in my 30s at the time. I don't remember for sure, but and so these were just some reflections as I thought about this subject and intentional grandparenting. Could say more there, but I think I'll let it at that. We'll jump right in here. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Psalm 78. I just make a bit of an apology here. I know I'm using a PowerPoint here. I'd love to pray just preaching right out of the Bible. And I like to see people actually paging through Bibles. So you can turn there, or if it suits you better to actually read off the screen, I think the words are the same, at least if you're in the King James Version. So very powerful passage here. You're familiar with it, I'm sure. It speaks volumes. It kind of goes right to the major points, I think, that would have to do with intentional grandparenting. It goes like this: give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. Look at the categories here, which I don't want to try to unpack, but to my law in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old. Is that from Scripture? I don't know. It might just be the things that have been passed down from generation to generation. And a little description, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. And then this great verse, we will not hide them from their children. And every time I read that there, I'm kind of like, no, which children are you talking? Are you talking about my children or my father's children or my grandchildren or who? Just says their children. Well, fill in the blank. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come. That's who we're speaking to. And what are we going to show? The praises of the Lord. Not our complaints. Not everything that's going wrong with life. But we're going to begin with the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He hath done. We're not going to hide them. Brothers and sisters, wherever you're at in life, whether you're a grandpa or grandma, so I know some of you are single folks, but I know you have got children children and grandchildren, so to speak, in your life as well. We're not going to hide them. Okay, the praises of the Lord, His strength and His wonderful works. Brothers and sisters, let's not go silent in old age. Let's not go silent. Let's speak when it's time to speak. So here's a few more comments on this, some work I've done on it over the years. So here you see on this screen, Vision of Church. It's a great verse from Scripture. Where there is no vision, the people perish. We've likely have been preached at and even preached it ourselves multiple times. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Clearly, vision is absolute necessary. I tell young people when I'm speaking to them, if you had buttons on you that I could go and push the button and it was the vision button, believe me, I would be around pushing all of them. Because I know one thing, if that one thing could be put in place, life would change. Life always changes when our vision becomes fixed on the Lord. And so I put vision of church here intentionally because so often I think, at least as an older man, what I feel, even in my own congregation, is the lack of drive and purpose, whether it's a grandchild or whatever. And mind you, I'd have much hope in the rising generation, so don't hear me speaking down to them, but we probably all have felt that jolt. I mean, what matters here? Anyway, it occurred to me that vision doesn't just drop out of the sky. It just doesn't one day, plow, it falls on somebody, and from there on, all is well. There must be something behind it, and so as a teacher, as a father, as a grandfather, I've spent a fair amount of time and energy thinking and trying to ponder the issues of what's behind this. Well, behind vision is values. You live out of your values. And so do your children. And so do your grandchildren. You can fake it for a while if you want to. Some people get really good at it with the public face of actually giving you a sense that this is their values rather than this. But you can't hide it forever. You live out of your values. Okay? By the way, if you want a King James word for this thing of values, it's that which is highly esteemed. And the scriptures are clear on this. It says that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination with the people of God. It's an abomination with God. I'm sorry. That which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination with God. So if people really care about whoever the newest sports star is or the newest automobile that has come out or pickup truck or whatever, if that's what they're really keyed in on, well, maybe you ought to just take that as a warning that that's not a place to put your estimation. Very fascinating verse in the Bible or verses. You may turn in to Hebrews chapter 11. And again, words here that you're familiar with, but I just want to point them out to you on this point. By verse 23, chapter 11, verse 23, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. And it'd be interesting if we had time to look at what these parents, and I wondered where the grandparents may have fit into this story. When Miriam hid the baby, I wonder if Grandpa was still around and knew that this is what was happening or how this was. By faith, Moses, this is where I really want you to see, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, we have many times asked ourselves the question, how in the world did Moses survive being taken as however old he was, but very young, obviously, a baby, put into Pharaoh's household, and here as an adult, his life begins to unfold differently. Well, it tells us here, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. How did he get to that set of values? I've wondered. And it says in verse 26, there's your word esteem. Esteeming the reproach of Christ, greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. There's your value statement. Do you see it? It's his values. So he esteemed or he held in high regard or high value. It says here the reproach of Christ. Don't ask me to explain how that was understood by Moses, but... And he esteemed that greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Why? For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Where did he pick up such discernment? How did he come to have this kind of understanding? My point is that if the values had not changed for Moses or been established on the people of God in the reproach and everything that went along with that, we'd have never heard of him. I guess we wouldn't. But that was his key, values. So behind vision lies values. Your vision is in your value. If you care a whole lot about money, et cetera, well, the next farm is in the vision and is the primary drive. Well, that's going to result in a whole set of things that happen because that's what's valued. And I just need to stop there. Well, what's behind values, this story? So if you want to affect the values of your grandchildren or your children, I can tell you it lies largely in the stories you tell and how you tell them. That has the biggest impact. Sheila's family, great storytellers. And I know I kind of have a problem with that too, but... Look, the Bible is a story. And obviously we should begin with that one and know that story really well and tell it over and over and over and over again to ourselves and to our children and to our grandchildren. So I want to make that clear. And then it's the stories that are associated there and how we associate them. Okay, in order to try to get finished in time and still and not get too sober here, I just would want to say this very quickly. Even the issue of humor. Is there a place for a humorous story? Well, of course there is. I'll just pitch it in here for whatever it's worth. Our grandchildren should learn to appreciate good humor. Can't help but tell you one that Sheila's great-grandfather would told a number of times that it makes me laugh. If I get through it without laughing and having a fit of laughter, and yet, forgive me, but he tells the story of when he was a tinner. Back in the day, they called him tinners, who did the standing seam roofs and did a lot of things are made of tin years ago. He was a tinner, worked on roofs mainly. And there was this very, very wealthy man in the Shippensburg area. His name was George Stewart. And they said at one time, George Stewart owned 100 farms, right? And that's been confirmed. I asked a couple of times to be sure it was true. And he was also a banker and a few other things along the line. When George Stewart would have Jake Martin, my wife's great-grandfather, do his roofs. So he was doing a lot of George Stewart roofs over the years. And this is a story he would tell about that. He said, we were up on one of George's farm roofs, and he owned a number of farms around there, but the next door farm was not owned by him. And George would always come driving in, and I don't know if this was early enough to be horse and buggy or car, but he would come in somewhere around midday to check on how you were doing. And normally he had something to cheer you along, maybe, I don't know, a pie or something, who knows what. Well, he can pull in here one day, and we're all up there on the roof. And don't you know that as soon as he pulled in, he said to one of the helpers, he said, hey, go down there to Sally. I can't remember her name, but this was a neighbor, just the neighboring farm. Sally always has pies. I believe it was shoe fly pies or something like that. And she'll have them out and go down there and buy 3 pies and bring them back. We're going to have them for lunch. So Jake says down there, the guy goes, driving whatever he was in, down to the neighbor and walked in. Out comes a dog. The guy jumps back in the car or whatever he was in, comes back to the job site, says, she ain't got any. And so there's a little chatter there. And George said, don't tell me Sally doesn't have any pies. She's always got pies. I'll go get them myself. So down he goes. They can see this from the roof, right? George goes pulling in. I'll say car because he gets out of the car. Out comes the dog. George gets back in his car, drives back up to the house. She's not home. Well, it's a humorous story. There's nothing good. It's just that's a fascinating story of how life would have been. We're tinning roofs. We're up on our roof. Here comes the boss. He comes. And so anyway, it's this kind of thing that is really, really fascinating. So how about before values? Just a little more on that. And incidentally, if you want any of these slides, I have hard copies that I'll give to Caitlin. And she can copy them if you want them. You're welcome to them. So here's story on the left-hand side, as you can see. I also put observed culture because your stories kind of flow out of how you experience the culture that you live in. And you tend to tell them out of your perspective of that culture. I was just talking to Wilmer here over breakfast and remembering some things, and we talked about how one of the people in our congregations and in our circles who have the most difficulty with our culture are people who have been burned by it. They've been abused by it. You take an abused lady who has been mistreated by the men in a particular culture, and I can tell you that's a very difficult thing to get past. Because they can't see the culture except through those glasses. Okay, now I only use that as an example to say, you also have whatever glasses you have on. Just for me, I'll be very fair with you. I grew up in a very good family. I grew up in a church that wasn't, you wouldn't have considered it a wonderful, wonderful church, but you know, it nurtured me. It was, as I look back on it, it's like, you know what? I'd learned volumes from just by example. I remember some single young ladies, well, they were older, middle-aged ladies and maybe a little older, taught Sunday school and so on. And unknown to me, sitting in that Sunday school classes down in the basement, you know, as the sunlight came streaming in through the windows and all of that, and Catherine and Anna and a number of those people who were teaching Sunday school class, just how that actually impacted me. So the glasses I look through, when I look at conservative Mennonite community culture, I tell the good stories. I see it as very positive, but I'm aware that not everybody sees it that way. That's why I put observed culture in here, because you tend to have the stories you tell, they're slanted by the way you have seen it or understood it. And for me, it's helpful just to remember that when I'm talking about things. But I could say more about that. Story produces heroes. As a school teacher, this is what I've discovered. On the value issue, a young man, a young lady, I suppose, too, almost always, the values that they are holding are the values that flow out of who their heroes are. Okay? It's who they hold in high estimation. And as a teacher and as a father, I've discovered that unless you'll struggle like everything on this value thing if you don't touch the heroes. That's where you got to get your finger on. Now, this was a son and not a grandson, but I remember one time he was going through, he had a deck of basketball cards. And I'm always quick to say he didn't get them for me. But anyway, he had a deck of cards, you know, that had, the famous basketball players or whatever. So I saw him there. So I sat down beside him and I said, Jordan, on the back of that card, does it say anything about how long that man prays? Yeah, I was smirking a little bit. And he said, no. Oh, he might have been 6 years old. I said, does it say on there if he's on his first, second, third, fourth wife? Does it? No, that he saw where I was headed. He kind of smiled. And okay, I didn't smack his hands or take his cards. All I wanted him to do was think about one thing. So that man can bounce a basketball down a court. And he's three times as tall as I am. That was stretched. But he's a tall man, and he can throw it through. And they pay him millions of dollars to do that. So what? Could he live with one woman all of his life and raise 5, 6, 10 children and have them be solid contributors to the society where they live? Is he really worthy of hero status, pray tell? That's the question. That's all I wanted him to think about. And so what I'm encouraging us to do is when you tell your stories, who's the hero of the story and why? I remember hearing, can I have just a few minutes beyond 10:30? No, be careful here. 10:35, I think, is what I'd say. Shut down now. I remember sitting in a circle of men one time. It was a deacon, and bless his heart, he really was a good man. But he began to tell a story about how when he was young, and he and his friend were in a certain car, his friend was doing the driving, and mind you, the police got after them. And he said, my friend just put her down to the metal. And he put the pedal to the metal, and he was gone. That, we never saw that. The policeman was left in the dust. And I thought, I just wilted. I'm like, in my heart, I'm like, brother, look at these little guys standing around you, hearing you tell that story. Who's the hero of this story? Who's the person whom you're kind of lifting up? Okay, I'm not trying to put that man down because he was a good man. It probably just was not aware that when he was telling this story of how that might impact a child who was listening on and how that might shape and form his sense of manhood and hero and so forth. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, okay? The stories we tell produce heroes, the important people. That informs values. And that informs passion. Nobody has passion or vision for something they don't care about. Nobody. And so if I see anything in my set of responsibilities as a grandpa, intentional grandparenting, I want to affect the passion of the rising generation. I do want them to be good people. I want them to be good moral people. But I want them to be more than that. I want them to be passionate for the kingdom of God. Okay? And again, this doesn't just fall out of the sky. It happens to be, I think, a series, this kind of thing that is worked on over generations and over time, over and over and over again, so that it becomes very clear to a child growing up, this is what dad cares about, this is what grandpa cares about, this is what grandma cares about. Passion and vision, and finally the word impact I put in here. We all want to make a difference. Okay, and you can actually let this fit your own self too. So who are your heroes? Out of those heroes comes the values and so forth and so on. It's the reason we love to tell a story like Dirk Willems. Okay, those are the kinds. So there are Bible stories. Never neglect them. As our children were growing up, we tried real hard, okay, to work on that. There are other stories that we add in. I gave you a humorous one. It's not that they all have to be absolutely pious. But again, the question is, who are the heroes at the end of the day? Back to Psalm 78. So this is downstream a little bit. So I just pushed a pause button there to put in that push that as the older generation, what stories are we telling? How are we telling them? And who are the heroes that emerge out of those stories as we tell them? Big thing. Intentional grandparenting right there. 78 verse 5. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel. This is right on the heels of the verses I read earlier. Which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. That the generation to come might know them. There again, these are stories. It's a Bible stories, commands. Even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. So generation to generation to generation. And why? That they might set their hope in God. Not in the government, not in their bank account, not any of that, but they might set their hope in God. That's the reason. And not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Brothers and sisters, we live in the most affluent society that the world has ever known. I teach world history, and just know a little bit about, not much, but a little bit about how the world has operated. Listen, I would be classified, Sheila and I would be classified somewhere at least in the lower sections of middle class America, if not almost in poverty. We don't feel that way at all, but we're down there somewhere. You know what? We can travel almost anywhere in the world. It's not that we have a lot of money, but if we wanted to travel to China, we'd live in a country that gives us a kind of documentation that we actually could. And I have enough money in my back, well, not my back pocket, but I have enough money around that I might have to scrape a little bit, but I could do it. It's no wonder that we have set our hope somewhere else. But the lives we live and the things that we do and the stories we tell, that they might set their hope, and the way we live our lives, that they might set their hope in God. And not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. It goes on to say, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Very powerful passage there. Goes on to say, and this is downstream a little bit, he in the same passage, he caused an east wind to blow. You remember, he gives a recounting, a long recounting of the history of Israel in Psalm 78. I guess maybe to make sure they knew the stories they were supposed to tell. This is what should be passed on. Here it is in verse 26. He caused an east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his power he brought in the south wind. He rained flesh, you know, that was these birds, right? That also upon them as dust and feathered fowls, like as the sand of the sea. And he let it fall in the midst of their camp, round about their habitations. So they did eat and were well filled, for he gave them their own desire. Now, I'm not exactly stuck on the King James Version, but I still preach out of it because it's the one I'm the most familiar with. And the one that here's a particular piece of language out of the KJV you won't find any other translations normally. They were not estranged from their lust. Okay, so the problem in all of this is they were still cozy with their lust. Okay, so they weren't strangers to it. Okay, you follow. So they're, but while their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the chosen men of Israel. So if I just may make the application very quickly, you extend the affluent society that I just got done talking about it. It is so easy. It is so easy to indulge in the lust of the flesh. And I'm not talking about immorality. Here it's just talking about a diet. It's talking about food that they just thought they had to have. That's what's in focus. And it points out that this was a problem. This led them to eat that food probably too fast or something like that. Their lust got away from them. And whatever they did with those birds, it killed a whole pile of them. I just pointed out that, again, we are at the head end now of an affluent society. When I say the head end, I mean we're the older people. And the younger people learn from us, from our example, just exactly what we do if, in fact, we find ourselves in this affluent society. And the urging here, he tells us, well, watch out for your lust here. Goes on to say a little bit more about this. Therefore, their days did he consume in vanity. Huh, that's an interesting line. Since they had this problem, okay, now all the time they have a religious framework, right? But they're not estranged from their lust. Therefore, their days did he consume in vanity, just whiling their time away, just doing this, doing that. We already gave, Marvin warned us about this, and I tried to warn us, and I just say it again. You know, if we live, if we got plenty of money, and if we now we're retired, it's very easy just to while away the time. And their years in trouble, he says. Goes on to say in verse 36, nevertheless, even in spite of all of that, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues, for their heart was not right with him. Neither were they steadfast in the covenant. I'm not wanting to give some kind of a stern warning so much here. It's just to say, look, here's the word of the Lord. Just let it fit your foot however it fits. So what I have said to the younger generation, if I can slip this in here. So my dad was from the silent generation. Okay. So forgive me, we're in a mixed group here. So my dad didn't talk much about the birds and the bees and such, et cetera. So that was a silent generation. And we found fault with it. Some of us thought we were going to fix all that. But I've learned something. That whole thing of not being silent is more difficult than what you think when it gets right down to speaking to the next generation. What I'm saying to the young people who come to Faith Builders are really good people. And if you send some there, thank you. They're very, very fine young people. But this generation has learned how to talk. They're talkers. They can give testimonies to that grandfather Brookholder I just got done talking about. I don't know if I ever, probably did hear him stand up and give a testimony at church before. I don't remember if I did or not, but young people today are really good at it. They're talkers. That's not all bad, so don't hear me. But look, nevertheless, they did flatter me with their mouth. and they lied with their tongues. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I can stand up here and fool you for about half an hour. I can't fool Sheila because she lives with me. But I'm just saying why their heart was not right with him. I have 7 suggestions for you. Be an example. And maybe harking back to last evening, put first things first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Sermon on the Mount. You're familiar with the passage. Remember my little matrix from last night when you fill that in. So where does seeking the kingdom first fit into those categories that we were looking at there, category 1, 2, 3, and 4? Okay, so put first things first. Second of all, tell the story and then stories. That undergird or stand alongside the story. Tell me the story of Jesus, we sing. Write it on my heart. Okay, and I just want to emphasize, we go astray if that's not first and foremost. And then if we bring our other stories alongside here. Love the law of God. You know what? I used to memorize, and you can say, oh, how love I thy law, it is my meditation all the day, it says in Psalm 119. Thou through thy commandments hast made me wiser than mine enemies, for they are ever with me. Why, I even know more than my teachers? Because I keep thy commandments, and so on, it says there. I'm going to guess that there's a lot of memorizers in this group here, but you know what? I've decided probably one of the best pushbacks against dementia and falling to pieces is to actually memorize. Exercise the brain. So I actually have gone back into doing more memory work. I still have no shining example, so don't get any wrong ideas there. But I've gone back into memory because, first of all, loving the law of God and putting it in my heart. And then, second of all, I think it helps to keep that brain working properly. So love the law of God. Be a mentor. We didn't know that term back in the day I was growing up. I never heard it until, I don't know, last 15 years maybe. But I had mentors. My dad was one. John D. Martin was one. Taught school with him for 6 years. And others. My grandfather already mentioned to you, a mentor. The word discipler would be good in here. But I put here life on life. The best thing you can do for your grandchildren is life on life. Now, I know some of you don't live close to your grandchildren. They may be a long ways off, and so you do what you can do. But life on life is the very best thing that can happen there, just working alongside of them in whatever they're doing. Is that still up there? Yes, okay. Boy, it looks like we're going down through a little faster. What am I? You know, I know what's going on. I have my... you know, I've spoken publicly enough that I realize now and then if you're a mouse in your pocket and it's turned on and then you bump it around a little bit, it makes things happen here that you don't want to happen. Five, stay healthy. Okay. I know, sitting in this audience, people who suffer from various health issues, and I'm not stupid. I'm 70, and she ain't going uphill real fast. I just want to be understood here that there's a way to work with this. But I give a couple of things here that I think are fairly simple. So work, do useful things, do find some rest. It occurred to me one day that it's not unholy to actually get awake feeling well rested. In fact, it probably is more holy than the opposite. You know, back in the day when I was in quadrant one all the time, we were talking about that urgent and important. I wouldn't brag or complain, but I was doing with far less than 8 hours of sleep a night. I know that much. I found out something, Elmer, by the time that you're 70 and a little before that, hey, you need more rest than that. At least I do. Oops. At least I do. So adequate rest, but again, notice work, rest, diet, pay attention to it, exercise, pay attention to it. These are some of the simple things that we work into the habits of life, what we actually do day in and day out. And I struggle as much with this as anybody else, but just saying that it is helpful for your grandchildren, for you to stay healthy. As healthy as you can, given the circumstances that life might bring your way, because they can be very difficult for sure. Six, stay engaged with life. Don't retire there, as you can see. We've talked about this before. I'll not say more about it right now. And finally, stay holy. Without holiness, no man will see the Lord. And by the way, the word holy is just... it can be understood well with wholesomeness or completeness, well-balanced. And that would be what I would put here. I have one final story and I'll sit down. This one is the one I probably love to tell the most. It's a bit personal, but it's not all that personal. But there's a great set of verses in the book of Malachi where there's some question and answers going back between God and Malachi and the people, and he says to them at one point, he's talking about tithes and offerings, and after he talks about tithes and offerings, he says, look, test me, try me, see if you don't obey me in this way, if I won't just open the windows of heaven and pour out blessings on you that you won't even be able to handle. So the story goes like this. We homeschooled back in the day in Chambersburg, and we were taking a homeschooling kind of end-of-the-year trip with a number of other families, some of them non-Mennonite, some of them Mennonite, a bit of an eclectic group like those homeschool groups are. And here we go down 283. Those of you from Lancaster will recognize this story immediately. 283 going into Lancaster. On your right-hand side, south side of 283, is Kreider's Fertilizer. One of the men who had... who was on this trip was non-Mennonite. He had just kind of left or walked out of his church. And don't you know, he had the gall to go back and borrow a bus from them in order for this trip to happen. So here we are going down. Right there at Kreider's, don't you know, there was a thumping and a smoke flying and things going in all kinds of different directions. And boom, we stopped right there, right just out right across from Kreider's fertilizer transmission was ruined, except for one thing. She would go in second gear, mind you. No reverse, no other gears, but she would go in second gear. And so children got out of the bus. There was just a low fence at that time. I don't know what's there now, but they jumped over the fence, kind of. Some of them did and went in there to Kreider's, and some of us did. This bus could go in second gear, so there's an exit just right up the street there a little bit. Went up there to that exit, got off in second gear, right? Being mindful of the fact that we don't have to back up here, or we'll be in trouble. I came across and drove the bus back down to Kreider's fertilizer right there. Parked it. What are we going to do? Made a few phone calls and thought, you know what, maybe if we went on back roads the whole way home, we could actually get home by 4 o'clock if we just kept her in second gear and crawled along at that rate, and it'd go down like that. We probably could do that. Well, it was about lunchtime, but it wasn't 11 o'clock probably by that time. And so the children had gotten their lunches out. It was a beautiful spring day, kind of like this. And so they were sitting there against the wall eating their lunches, and they were having a wonderful time. And we were trying to work details out. And we're making the final decision to go ahead and pack up and start to head back toward Chambersburg area, back roads. Well, I walked into the office, and there was, I guess, one of the younger Kreiders. I don't know who it was, but somebody behind it was Saturday, but they were there open behind the counter. And just as we were getting ready to, we had prayed about this, by the way, of course, Lord. The guy who had borrowed the bus, he was like, what am I going to do? And I was like real calm and cool and clever. It'll be fine. Inside, I'm thinking, yeah, what are we going to do? But I said, it'll be okay, Bob, it'll be all right. You know, we won't let you sit in high and dry. If we have to buy the bus, we'll have to buy the bus. What are we going to do? But just as we turned around to leave, I said to the man behind the counter, say, you don't happen to have 5-speed transmission for an international bus, do you? He looks. Yeah, he said, I have 10, and I'll give every one of them to you. And I'm like, I thought he was joking. I said, you have 10 transmissions. Yeah, he said, they're all but brand new. He said, down there's a garage. They're sitting in the front of the garage. There's coveralls there. There's tools there. And there were three of us who were mechanics. Long story short, an hour and a half, we were on our way with a new transmission. And that I never forget walking in that garage, and there were all 10 transmissions sitting ducks just right down in the road. And we had our pick, whichever one we wanted. I'm like, Lord, we only need one transmission, then we're not hauling the other 9 with us. We're just one. But I was reminded immediately, just try me, just ask me, try me, and see if I won't open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that you can't handle. Of course, I know there are other stories, but here's the kind of story I want my grandchildren to hear. And I want them to realize there was no hero there, really, except for some fathers and a couple people who were trying to care for their children and to give them a good experience in life. We were going down there to the tabernacle and to the wax museum and a couple different places. We actually kept all of our appointments. That day we had to shove a couple of them downstream just a little bit. We kept all of our appointments and got home. You can believe that the children have never forgotten that. Neither has their dad. A great story of that nature. With that, I just want to encourage you from the Sermon on the Mount. Ask whatever your issue is, wherever you're at with your children, grandchildren, or whatever. Sermon on the Mount, ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock. And it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. And he that seeketh, findeth. To him that knocketh, it shall be opened. God bless you as you grandparent.